What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Self-Made Web Designer Podcast. You know, when you're starting a web design business, you've got a lot of questions. You've got a lot of anxiety. There's a lot of fear that's associated with getting something going like that. You think things like, should I be a sole proprietorship? Should I have an LLC? Should I have a lawyer? What about taxes? How do I keep myself from getting sued? All of those questions that are really scary, and a quick Google search will make you even more scared to the point of becoming frozen and just not even getting started in the first place. Well, I've got good news for you. We are talking about those very issues on this week's episode with Matt and Mike from HTML All the Things. They've got a great podcast. They've got a great web design company that they have been running together as partners for the last 6 years, and they're going to talk about their experience. They're going to talk about the ins and outs, the ups and downs, all the things that they learned along the way, and I know that you're going to benefit from it. Before we go into the episode, I have to ask, have you signed up for the Web Designer Starter Kit course at selfmadewebdesigner.com? This is a course where I lay out all the steps that I took 6 years ago when I first started freelancing as a web designer, and I went from knowing absolutely nothing about design or development to, within 18 months, doubling the income of my full-time job, only working 18 hours a week on a web design side hustle. Over 1,000 people have been through this course, and I've gotten great feedback on it. I know that you're going to enjoy it. I know that you will benefit from it. If you haven't, go sign up today, selfmadewebdesigner.com. It's right there and it's easy to find. But without further ado, are you ready to hear from Matt and Mike from HTML All the Things? Okay, here we go. Well, Matt and Mike, thank you so much for being on the Self-Made Web Designer Podcast. It's awesome to have you.
Oh, thank you for having us on, for sure.
Yeah, thanks.
And you guys are the first like duo interview that I've done, a three-person chat. So this is exciting. So tell me a little bit about your history. Tell me about how you got started doing what you are doing and where you are today.
Mike and I have been like sort of together, if you will, since the college days. So we went to college for computer engineering technology. That was a heavy look at computer hardware, electronics, electrics, those type of things. So we kind of started there. And Mike and I, at that point, were discussing starting a business, but the business was actually supposed to be an IT business. We started that type of idea where we're like, we're going to do home IT. We've been at various professional places, like we did co-ops. So it's like, we're going to do, I think Mike did IT. I for sure did IT. And then Mike, you also did something else too, right?
Yeah, I did electrical engineering and drafting.
Right. So like we were like, okay, you know, we have professional experience in this now. Let's try to do sort of home IT and see if we can get into maybe small business IT. We had a client at that point who was looking at getting some of our services, but he already had an IT team that he worked with. And so he had an idea for spinning out multiple websites to a particular section of the industry here in Canada. We were going to do that. We were going to treat it more like a project rather than switch the whole business. It was still going to be an IT business, but then we were just going to do this sort of project. So we started learning Dreamweaver, of all things, to make websites. And we started, you know, toying with, should we learn CSS and stuff? Because this is just a project. But this kind of spun out of control, and we realized there was some pretty decent opportunities in the web development space. And that's sort of how we ended up here. In terms of the podcast, what ended up happening was we kind of wanted something to fill in the blank, basically. It'd be like, hey, if no one's calling us, like, we want to be okay. We want to have something to do. I want to be able to sit at the desk and actually do something and not be like, man, I better, like, you know, better, you know, check the watch and see if anyone's going to call me today type of thing. That's where the idea for HTML The Things came in. And then my podcast experience kind of lent me to, hey, if we want to get the word out about us, let's do a podcast. And then it just kind of went from there.
So you guys really have used the podcast as a way to market your business as well.
It's been a little bit of that. And the big thing with the podcast and HTML things, just to add to what Matt was saying, is it was kind of a way for us to showcase a portfolio, get our name out there, awareness. That was like one of the initial goals of it. And then what ended up happening was it kind of built more of a community than we expected behind it. And it's shift, like our focus is now shifting from it being just a portfolio piece or a piece to get us more business to it actually being its own standalone community. It's actually being like content that we can generate and whatever else we decide to do with the HTML things. So that's another aspect of this whole thing that we'll probably be talking about throughout is the shift from like the, you know, regular client side business stuff to then working more on focusing more on the HTML, all the things side and building that community and helping like junior developers and interacting with people like you and stuff like that.
And I love what you guys have said about kind of seeing what is in front of you and seeing what's possible or available and then making a shift according to where your business kind of lends itself to going. And I think a lot of people who are starting a business or they're freelancers, like that's kind of their story. And you walk into it thinking, okay, I'm going to go after this. I've got a plan. It's going to look exactly like this. And then a few months into it, you're like, this looks nothing like what I thought it was going to look like. So talk a little bit more about that. Cause I'm sure there was a process. I'm sure that you guys chatted about that and, you know, weighed out the pros and the cons and probably face some obstacles along the way. So what did that look like for you?
Well, I know that one of Mike and my biggest problems was the fact that we were trained in technical stuff, but we were not trained in business stuff. And so obviously we had our sort of, you know, ear to the ground and we sort of picked up business ideas from seeing the App Store explode. Like we were in college when BlackBerry was exploding. And then we left college as BlackBerry was sort of winding down. And so smartphones were very much new. I didn't have a smartphone until maybe the second or third year in college. So we kind of saw, that was sort of like what we saw as like the big business at the time was these apps, these ideas, people spinning up web apps and or just straight up, you know, native apps for iPhone and stuff like that and BlackBerries and everything else. And so we had ideas in that regard, but our biggest hurdle, I'd say, would be just the straight up sort of legal stuff. Like we didn't know whether we should be getting a license. We didn't know who to talk to. We didn't know how taxes worked. And Mike and I, and like Mike can attest to this, Mike and I struggled to find that advice, honestly. We tried lawyers. We tried business service places that were literally just called business services. We tried a bunch of them. And then eventually we did find one, a local guy who runs like an accounting office. And he's also our business advisor as well. And we've been kind of with him ever since, but he kind of set us straight because what I find is, and like Mike can also attest to this too, is that the business world is like, there's a lot of, you know, regulations and legal stuff that you have to follow, but it's not as, say, strict as you may think, but you need someone who's been there to talk you through it and just to say, oh, don't worry about this. Don't worry about this. You do this. And if you hire me, I'll do this part. And that's exactly what our accountant / business advisor has done for us over the years. I was actually just there today getting some advice. So, I mean, I think that was the biggest hurdle. And that was definitely the biggest jump forward for Mike and I, where we were finally like, okay, we need we're in Canada. So we need like a master business license. We need to do this. We need to do taxes at this point, but not yet. We need to do, you know, all these different things, not to get into the weeds of it. But that was the biggest hurdle I think we had, was just getting that footing and being comfortable. Because to Mike and I at the time, it was like, do all businesses have lawyers? Or like, do we just do it and then call our tax guy, like call H&R Block? What do we do?
Yeah. So did you find that what you needed in that regard was much more different than the IT side of the business that you were also trying to build at the same time, or was it completely different?
It's kind of a meld, I would say. Like one of the things that Mike and I were concerned for was, okay, we have to engineer solutions for customers, let's say, on the technical side for the IT stuff. So we wanted to figure out, okay, this is how we're going to treat customers that have a that need a need a backup solution. These are how we're going to treat customers, like just sort of standard ways to treat customers. There was still some engineering and some struggles on that business side, certainly, like, you know, what services do we use? What computers do we use? How do we handle people's data? That type of thing, because people have, you know, everything on their computers now. So it's like, what, you know, how do we handle this? And if somebody needs a new hard drive, like, do we send it to a recovery service? We were trying to figure out all the little like nitty gritty. I think ultimately that stuff didn't give us the anxiety that the business side did. I think that was the ultimate thing is like, yes, all that stuff is a hurdle, but it's a hurdle where if you came to me today or even came to Mike and said, I need a backup solution. And it's a backup solution. Like, let's say it was super intricate and we had no idea. Mike and I, given the time, could absolutely engineer a solution that would more or less, you know, fix, you know, do your goals. We know where to start, how to do it, more or less. We know how to research it at least. Whereas with the business stuff, it was like, where do we even begin?
I get a lot of questions regarding those issues, and people are like, some of them even have the know-how on the technical side of things, like you're saying, but they're just so afraid of messing something up and getting sued. So what do you think about that? So should somebody really make sure that they have all their bases covered before they jump into business, or should they figure it out as they go along, or is it maybe a mix of the two?
We kind of ran into this situation as well, and it kind of guided us in the different path that we were talking about for web development. So at one point, we were thinking about doing IT, and we were thinking about doing in-home IT. And we went to the lawyer and they had a conversation with us. Like, if you want to do in-home IT, then you have insurance. Because what happens if you go home, if you go to their home and break their TV? Stuff like that. So some things, like when it's something that you can clearly see could be a problem, I would say have that conversation with someone that knows, like a professional help, like a lawyer or a business advisor or an accountant before you jump into it. But with web development, which is the main reason why probably a lot of the audience is listening, a lot of that can be started and worked on before you go and start to, you know, figure out all your business licenses, all your stuff like that. Like, you could become a contractor on Indeed, or it could become a contractor on Upwork without having to worry about that right away. You can start learning about it without having, you can have your first contract without having a business license, right? So I don't think that should stop you in this kind of realm. But again, like Matt and I did have some issues at the beginning because we were so all over the place. We were like, well, do we want to do IT? And then we ran down all these rabbit holes of, you know, if we do IT, we have to get the insurance. If we do web development, we don't. So maybe we should focus on that.
Yeah, it seems like people have what I call righteous excuses. You know, like, I would love to start a web development business, but like, what about all of the accounting? What about all of the legal stuff? And at the end of the day, it's really just, well, you're really more afraid of just going for it. And so my encouragement is always, you know, rather than letting a righteous excuse hold you back, commit first and then figure it out, you know, because unless you've got some huge, you know, $100,000 project, which is really unlikely for you to get when you're first getting started, then there's not too much trouble that you can get into. And this, of course, is not any kind of legal or tax advice for anybody listening. But at the same time, you know, I think it's almost like any business you do, there's going to be a risk to it. You know, there's going to be a chance that you're going to mess something up and somebody's going to get mad and figure out how to get back at you. But more often than not, I found that most people are willing to work with you or are willing to, even if I've made big mistakes before and people have been mad, but they've never come back and tried to steal my home from me or anything like that. So, and I don't know if that's been y'all's experience as well.
So it kind of comes from two disciplines. So like Mike said, we talk to a lawyer, then we talk to a business advisor. And I think the fear may come from most people, and like us included, thought, oh, we should be talking to a lawyer up front right away. And people that, from our experience anyway, from the legal side of things, are more paranoid, rightfully so. And so they immediately are like, you need to incorporate, you need to have all these insurances, you need to ensure that you won't get in trouble. And I think to like the layman, like a person who's completely not in business yet, if they hear that advice or read that advice, more importantly, because you can easily Google this stuff, they immediately go like, whoa, like I can get in trouble for this, 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 this. But you're 100% right in that most people aren't going to, first of all, it's a hassle for them to attack you, you know, legally. And then also it's like, if you're doing stuff in good faith, you know, it's semi-rare and it hasn't even happened to us at all where someone's trying to take advantage of us. You know, some people might try to get one over on you on the price or something. People like to negotiate, but we haven't experienced personally anyone try someone that was like, oh, I know what we'll do. We'll make it look like they deleted this database or something, right? Like, I'm sure that's something that's going through someone's mind where they're scared of, like, data loss is like one of the scariest things, right? And so I would say that you're right in that just go for it, but do like a guided go for it. Like check all your bases, but don't go like too crazy. Like you don't need to learn the tax code. You know, if you don't really want to do that, just find a person that's willing to do it at the end of the year or whenever you have to do it. Find a business advisor in our case that will suggest this is the type of business you should have. It should be, you know, a partnership, a limited, incorporated, whatever it is, depending on your country and the region. Find someone that will help you guide those decisions. And then once you've done it, it just doesn't matter. Like it falls by the wayside. You just don't think of that stuff anymore. And you're so focused on, you know, doing a good job that more or less, if you're good at your job and you like what you do, then the customers will just sort of, you know, realize and appreciate that even if you make a mistake.
Has it ever happened in the opposite direction where you've had a contract that you've had to force a client to adhere to?
We've had situations where we weren't paid for a while, but most of the time that's on us where we just didn't bill them in time and we didn't like, you know, pester them. And they're like, oh yeah, we forgot, and then they pay right away. So we've never had a situation where someone's like withholding payment because of a job like poorly done or job not done or something like that.
I will say, like on that topic though, I will say that we have, based on past experiences, changed our monetization policies, if you will. So for example, if we have one of those instances where someone's like very forgetful, we'll be like, okay, this person comes to us for projects, you know, semi-frequently, repeat customer. This person's forgetful. We're going to charge X amount up front for these people. Or, hey, like, you know, we were waiting for a year and a half for a couple thousand. You know, that's a little unacceptable. So let's, in the future, if the project costs, like totally just throwing fake numbers out there, but if the project is going to be over 2,000, let's charge 1,000 up front. So like we've had experiences in which we're like, we didn't like that. It wasn't like it was misconduct. We just didn't like that. So let's not do that again. Let's have it like this now.
So let's talk a little bit about the learning aspects of things, because it sounds like you probably had somewhat of an idea about web development, but still had to go through a learning process whenever you took on that first project. So what did that look like for you? And what did you find was the best way to kind of get proficient in web development?
It was kind of trial by fire for a lot of it. So the first project, like Matt was saying, was just helping someone maintain their Dreamweaver site. So that really didn't teach us anything like at all, because Dreamweaver is a steaming pile of garbage, just throwing that out there right away. So really we didn't get any experience there. And then our next web development project after that was a fairly big, like multi-page site for a health clinic. And it was a site that required a CMS, and it was a site that required a lot of updates and a lot of content. And that's what we were thrown into. And I think like Matt and I just kind of sat down and we worked through the night a couple times just to get something out there, just to get the, you know, templates out there, just to get something in front of the customer so that they see that we're working on it. And we were upfront with them saying like, this is one of our first projects. We don't have the full grasp on it, but we're definitely willing to try. And because of that, we'll lower the price and stuff. But it was still like, it was a very stressful experience for us, but it was like one of those things where you just say yes, even though you don't have the knowledge, and be as upfront as possible without obviously saying that you're an idiot or something. Like you don't say like, you know, I don't know any of this and I can never learn it. Like you can say, hey, listen, I'm really good at picking new technologies up. I've done, you know, some web development and it has worked out great for me. So I really want to take this project on because of the fact that I'm new. Like just know that it might take a little bit longer, but I'll get it done to the best of my ability. So saying wording like that, taking projects that you're not ready for is a scary thing, but it's a necessity when you're starting out because you're not going to be ready. Like, period. When you're first starting out in web development, when you take your first project on, it's going to throw you for a loop because there's going to be little things that you think are easy, but all of a sudden, you know, the setting up the development environment is all of a sudden going to take you 2 hours for some reason.
I encourage people who are just trying to learn to take on a small project for even a small price, because I know my own experience was if I didn't have the motivation of somebody is depending on me and also paying me, I don't think I would have stuck with it, you know, because if it's just me figuring out a hobby on the side, like, man, I'd much rather go watch something on Netflix than bang my head against my computer trying to figure out some JavaScript. Do you feel like that's the case for you? Do you feel like you would have figured it out on your own just because you love web development? Or do you feel like that was one of the motivating factors of you guys actually getting a solid grasp of all the software and coding and development languages?
We definitely, or at least personally anyway, we definitely seem to learn sort of based on the project, like in that regard for sure, I'd say. Mike and I are also just straight up tech enthusiasts, and that actually doesn't lend itself well to focusing on one particular thing. Like, some people are just absolutely in love with coding, the idea of coding, the algorithms, the, you know, whatever else they want to learn, they're absolutely in love with that. And I think Mike and I are more or less in love with just the tech industry in general. And we could have kind of fallen into any role in tech. And I think that that might be sort of the case for many people. Like, we could have so easily, if we were hired, we could have so easily been one of those people talking about tech on YouTube. And we could have just been reviewing phones for a living, you know. But at the same time, it wasn't like we disliked web development. And it's just, there's just the tech field is so far and wide, and there's so many ways. Like, you can get like really into the nitty-gritty of just microphones if you wanted to. And so the project really, or the projects that we took on in the beginning, really did help us focus in and really say, like, okay, we need to know this, and this. And like, it got to the point on a couple of our projects where I was like, I need to learn CSS. Like, this is not good. Like, I need to learn CSS straight up. This is taking me forever, and it absolutely shouldn't be. And so the project definitely steered us. However, I will say that in the case of people that are absolutely just in love with the idea of coding, that could be a very different experience where maybe they don't care about their phone. Like, I know a couple developers that, you know, still have an S7, but yet I'm always talking about my Note 10 Plus and how I want the new one, you know. I'm like that type of person. And so I'm distracted by the tech industry, whereas others are just sort of like, oh, I don't care. Like, I'm just building this speaker system or whatever they're building. And they're just focused on their project, and because that's what they're in love with.
You guys mentioned working through the night and really taking care of your clients. And I have found as a freelancer that that is a rare quality when it comes to people who are freelancers or have web development businesses. In fact, I've gotten a ton of business from people who had a horrible experience with someone else and came to me and asked me to, you know, essentially dig them out of a hole. And you also have a episode on your podcast called The Customer Experience. And so I wonder if you can talk a little bit about that, how you approach each project and maybe even some systems that you guys have developed to make sure that the quality is up there and the customer experience is something that they enjoy and talk to their friends about.
So there's a few things here, and I'm sure Matt can attest to some of them. One of the things that we have is we don't have too many systems in place. Like, we've started to put systems, little things in place. Like, you know, we have a quote structure. We have, like Matt was saying, we'll take some money up front usually now because we've had a few experiences where we did get paid late and stuff like that. But for the most part, we're extremely adaptive to our clients. And since it's only Matt and myself, we have the flexibility to be that adaptive. And the other thing is, like, what we've learned is you need to treat a customer like a partner instead of like that client and developer relationship that usually happens where you just kind of get the information, work on your own, and then, you know, kill all communication until you're done and then throw it back. No, it has to be kind of a consistent experience throughout. And you need to make sure that the initial ask of the client, of the customer, has to be that they are working with you. And if they can give you the right requirements to start with, it's going to make the experience a lot easier, because a lot of people just don't have the time that we found, like tons and tons of times where just to get that initial like startup call with a client takes some time. And then on that startup call, they're always rushing. But really, you need to, like, that startup call is super important. Like, when you're gathering the requirements, you need to get as much information there as you possibly can so that you don't make any like drastic mistakes as you go forward. Because as we all know, in the development industry, in the web development industry, what a client says and what they actually mean are two completely different things. And to extract that what they mean information, that's the thing that kind of comes with experience more than anything else. And that's what we're trying to master more than anything with this whole idea.
Yeah. So talk a little bit about that. What types of things have you figured out help to extract the meaning behind what they're saying?
So when a client has, when a client goes through what they want, they're usually just like, okay, I just need a website that shows the business. And that's what they say. Like, I need a website that competes with my customers, and I need to appear, I need to appear somewhere on the internet. That's usually how they approach us, like for a basic website. Obviously, more complicated web apps are a different thing, but in general, that's how it goes. And initially, it seems really easy because you can just go look at their competition, build something similar, and then show it to them. But really, you need to ask them more questions, like, how do you want to compete with them? Do you want to compete with them on keyword basis? So, like, do you want people to find you when they type, best plumber in Hamilton or something like that? Or do you want to compete with them in the sense that, like, if they type in Mike's Best Plumbing Shop, they're going to see you on Google? Because those are two completely separate website design and like projects completely in terms of time, in terms of how they look, in terms of what content they have. Like, you can't compare the two pretty much, because one is kind of a business card website you could probably build for very cheap, very quickly, like to just get them on Google essentially. And the other is a marketing site where SEO is an extremely important topic. So knowing exactly what the client wants from their site, like, do they want to drive business there? Do they want clients to be able to book appointments? Asking the right questions, that's the key. Because they're not going to tell you what they want, like, period. They're just going to tell you some garbage that's going to be useless. And you have to go in with a list of questions based on their business. It's hard to like give you a list of questions right now that I would ask a regular client, because I don't, like, it depends on the business. But if it's like a regular, plumbing business, like I said, I would be asking them, how do they want to get their customers? Do they want to compete with other people locally? Do they want to compete on a larger area? Do you want to be able to, book appointments right on your site, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that's kind of how I approach it.
So it's really a combination of curiosity and experience. The experience would be you've had a project like this before and seen the possibilities of what you could do with it. And the other side of it is you want to be more than just a yes person or a yes man or yes woman or whatever. Like, you're really just intrigued by the success of the business of the person that is reaching out to you.
Definitely. And I think another thing that's really important as well is it's experience in terms of overall experience and how many years you've had in the industry, but it's also experience with that particular client. So the reason why Mike and I don't have many systems in place that are very formal, like, we're not a big corporation where it's like, sign up here, submit ticket here, this is the ticket format, this is how you call us. We don't do it that way because we find that people work better when they sort of steer the experience. So an example would be one of our clients will call me, text me, and email me for everything technical, but then we'll call Mike and we'll only discuss things with Mike on the business side of things, the invoicing, the whatever. And the way that he put it once was that when he sees the call display, he wants to know what phone call he's picking up. Is he picking up a phone call regarding invoicing or something along those lines, or ideas? He bounces ideas off of Mike as well. Or is he picking up a phone call from me where I'm reporting, hey, this slider's done, or hey, I need new images from the slider, you got to call your graphic guy or whatever. And so we don't do that for anyone else. And he designed that system, but it's easy enough for Mike and I to abide by it. It makes him a lot more comfortable, and it's just way easier to sort of let them steer it. Some people will, and that's why Mike was saying those questions, some people will hurry, hurry, hurry. And even though you really pressure them and say, we need this information. Like, we need these, you know, 10 points answered. They might keep pushing away. But you might find that that person is really, really super busy, but will answer emails, you know, with a lot of detail because they do it when they can. Or they answer text messages. We have people that where they'll answer text messages more than anything else because they can quickly just bang out a bunch of text messages to whoever they're texting. And so we really sort of, we approach with the same idea of, you know, requirements gathering, figuring out the budget, then based on that, those two, to figuring out the project. But it's we approach each of those scopes at a broad sort of level. And it's because the customer themselves sort of define the their own experience. Now, I will say that maybe that would change in the event that Mike and I's company grows beyond us two being the people that call people. Because obviously in large teams, we can't just have people being like, no, remember, you're supposed to talk to this guy. No, remember, you're supposed to talk to this guy. And it would just be, you know, just a total... a total like disaster. Be like, no, wait, am I supposed to text this guy? Am I supposed to call this guy? And that's where the standards sort of come in. But at this scale, and especially when you're beginning, it's a lot more relaxing and it's a lot easier in our experience to let them steer the ship and you just try stuff. Try texting them. They never answer that text. Don't text them again. Like, that's what we do. Like, oh, they don't like texting. Okay, let's just not do that. You know, so stuff like that.
It's pretty unique. I've never interviewed anybody that has a partnership when it comes to a business. And I have friends who have been in partnerships and they've turned out horribly. But you guys have been doing this for a while together and seem to still have a good friendship intact and still have a good working relationship. What have you done to foster the health of that?
I would say that we approach ideas together. I think that's a big thing. And we approach ideas together and we also learned sort of our own communication schedule. So we learned that being sort of like not having instant answers was necessarily required, let's say. And so I would text Mike a bunch of stuff, you know, leave it at that. And this is my idea. And then maybe he gets back to me the next day because he's busy with another client. And that's totally fine. You know, we have our podcast, so we obviously go on a call for that. And then we will usually combine that with sort of a catch-up call. And so it's sort of learning how each other like sort of react to each other. Like, for example, Mike prefers, and yeah, like you can attest to this, Mike, you prefer to work on like one project or like you prefer to like sort of zero in, but I get bored and I don't like doing that. So I get like, a week into a project, I'm like, is this done already? type of thing. So I'm a very much a person where I'm like, ooh, let's try this idea. And so Mike kind of ropes me in because then he can say like, no, this idea is dumb. That one's going to require too much money or like whatever. And I do the same thing to his ideas as well. But I bring a bunch of ideas to the table. Mike brings a bunch of ideas to the table. And with both of our sort of unique work, I want to say work ethics, but that's not right. Maybe work styles, I guess. With both of our work styles, they kind of complement and contrast. Where like I kind of know like, oh, Mike's busy working on project X and like he'll be doing that for like a year or a month or whatever the project length is. Whereas me, I'll do the podcast, then I'll jump over here, then I'll jump over there. And I'm one of those people where I might be busy all day, like not doing work, but then I'll edit the podcast at 5 a.m. It doesn't bother me. And so that's where that communication delay kind of comes in. And I think that's really helped.
So it seems like there's a couple of things. It seems like there's a good cohesion of personality and work style that really complement each other. But there probably also needs to be a high level of trust between the two of you.
Absolutely, yeah. I think that it's a huge thing where if there's a task that Matt's doing, I don't question how he does it. Like at the end of the day, like the result, we'll both take a look at it and there might be some changes here and there, but really the process of him actually accomplishing it, I'm not going to question that because I know he's going to do it. It's been, I don't know how long, 6 years now that we've worked together. And it's just that it is just pure trust at this point. It's really easy for us to do that. We're both very adaptive. I think being rigid, a lot of entrepreneurs are very rigid in some ways, and that becomes extremely difficult when that's for partnerships. Because, like for instance, like Matt was saying, Sometimes I'll answer a message a day later because I have just so much other work that I'm doing. He's fine with that. But if there was, say, like a moment where he would constantly bug me saying that, like, you should answer, that probably wouldn't work for us. Like, that's the rigid stuff that wouldn't be okay. And it's the same the other way around. Like, if Matt asks me a question, or if I ask Matt a question and he doesn't answer, I also don't bug him. Like, I know that he's going to answer it if it's important. Like, sometimes, and we both know what's important, what's not important as well. Like, sometimes we'll throw something out there and it won't be a conversation, but it'll just be in the, you know, the sphere of what we're talking about. And we don't expect an answer on that as well. So it's just, it is the pure trust. It is like the cohesion. We just got lucky, I think. Like, we worked as lab partners in college a few times. We took a lot of classes together, so we knew it kind of worked. We were friends, so like we knew, like, you know, we played games together, hung out quite a bit. So we knew that that side worked. And then we kind of just took a risk and it worked out. It could have easily been the opposite way where, like, again, one of us was rigid on something and that was over.
So one last question before we end. I know you guys have run a podcast for a couple years now. You've built a community where you're helping people. What are some common themes that you have seen as, like, reoccurring issues that people run into when it comes to either learning web development or starting a web development business?
Number one thing, honestly, the first thing came to mind, they jump right into something like jQuery. They jump right into it. They have, like, they either have started a project or they want to start a project and they want to start something like, oh, I'm going to make my own light box or something for an image. And so the very first Stack Overflow article they hit, or the very first article they hit, is jQuery. And then they use that as sort of the basis for their learning. Now, I'm not saying anything against jQuery. We've used it. We still use it in some projects. But Mike and I are very much a proponent of learning the base and learning that vanilla HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. So then you know basically how to solve problems and how things render and how things are in web development, and learning them to an extent that you need them. Like, Mike uses JavaScript all the time to control APIs and all this other stuff, whereas I am the UI guy and the UX guy. So my JavaScript knowledge is very much, you know, I know how to change colors and do cool animations and do transitions and stuff like that, but I don't really know Mike's side too well. Can I learn it? Yes. Can he learn my side? Absolutely. But it's just more so like that. I'm sort of effectively learning what I need to know, but at the vanilla level. I'm not jumping in at like the jQuery level. And then when there's talk of like jQuery, you know, being no longer prevalent, as, you know, frameworks and libraries and everything else go in this industry, they come and go like all over the place. Then I'm not like worrying like, oh my God, like I don't know any JavaScript, you know, now you can always go back to that JavaScript, or you can always just use that if you can't get your view working or something. You can just be like, the heck with this. Like, I don't have time today. I'm doing this in vanilla today.
Yeah. So a few things. I think one big one is tutorial hell. We had an episode on it recently, and it's really one of those things where someone comes up to us and they're like, I've been like watching tutorials and watching YouTube videos for a year now, and I still don't think I can know anything and stuff like that. And I just keep going onto these courses or watching videos and I don't feel like I know anything. And they're just stuck in this thing called tutorial hell. And the way to get out of that is to just do a project, right? And I'm a big proponent of project-based learning. Like, we talked about it already, that how we started was a project for a client. But even if you don't have a client, because ideally, yes, try to get a client, learn that way. But if you don't, then just try to make something. Try to make a basic website. Try to make a web app that can do CRUD operations. Just try to make it. And while you're trying to make it, you're going to run into these situations where like Matt was saying, I don't know CSS. And then you're going to go and start learning CSS. But while you're learning, you're going to think like, oh, this can apply to this project. I know exactly how I'm going to use this like float left property or flexbox thing, right? I know exactly how I'm going to use this. I'm going to use it to make my website, you know, more responsive or something like that. Just as an example, those connections really helped me when I was learning. And that's what I kind of tell everyone that's learning as well. Start, figure out something that you want to do and learn based on that.
Yeah, that's awesome. Really great advice. Appreciate y'all being on the show. If you could just tell everybody who's listening where they can connect with you and find you.
Yeah, so we're from the HTML All the Things podcast. You can find us on htmlallthethings.com. New website incoming as well. And you can find our podcast. It's a weekly podcast released on Wednesdays. You can come and check that out on most popular podcast services.
Awesome, awesome. And I highly encourage anybody who's listening to subscribe, like, leave a comment, and also sign up for Patreon. I am a Patreon supporter of you guys. So definitely love all the stuff that you're putting out there. So thanks again. Hope to have you on again sometime soon, Matt and Mike.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you very much.
I love what Matt had to say about getting a web design business started. The first thing is just go for it. But the second thing is make sure you have at least a little bit of an idea of what you're stepping into before you jump off of the cliff. And that's a great strategy. And I think this episode covers all the basis of what you're going to need to know to really get started with a web design freelance business, full-fledged agency, or whatever you are trying to do. So super grateful to Matt and Mike for being on the show. Check out their podcast, HTML, All the Things. And you can hear a lot of great insight from them on a weekly basis as well. Well, I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Next week, we're switching it up a little bit. Hold your breath. Are you ready for a big announcement? It's not a big announcement. We're just switching the day to Wednesday. We're pushing it back a day. So Wednesday morning, 12 a.m., set your alarms. I know I've told you for the past however many weeks to set your alarms for Tuesday at midnight, but change it over. Wednesday, midnight. It's going to be a great episode. I've got Zach Gordon. Zach Gordon is an incredible JavaScript and WordPress teacher. He's got an amazing group of courses on Udemy and his own site where he teaches people how to develop plugins, WordPress themes, all in JavaScript or PHP, and you're going to benefit from it. You're going to love it. This guy's really fun. I had a great conversation with him. I know you're going to like it. Until then, don't forget, if you don't quit, you win.